house will be forever the mess.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's chicken.
Season 4, Episode 3 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon 1, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. My name is John Hansen. I'm your host. And our guest for this episode of the podcast, where we're talking about the 1990 Mr. Olympia, which was the only drug-tested Mr. Olympia, our guest today is Dr. Robert Goldman. And Dr. Goldman was the drug testing person for the IFBB. He was in charge of all the drug testing from when they started drug testing at the 1986 IFBB World Championships. He drug tested all the World Games, which were associated with the Olympics, of course. And he also drug tested the 1990 Arnold Classic and the 1990 Mr. Olympia contest, which, as I said, were the only two big major pro events that were ever drug tested in the history of the IFBB. So Dr. Goldman's going to tell us a little bit about his background, and then he's going to tell us how he met Ben and Joe Weider and how he started working for the IFBB. And he's also going to talk about the Hall of Fame that he does every year at the Arnold Classic, the International Sports Hall of Fame, which is a really great event. And he's good friends, of course, with Arnold Schwarzenegger and many of the luminaries in the bodybuilding and also the Hollywood industry. So Dr. Goldman's going to be an interesting interview. All right, I want to mention, of course, that we are brought to you by Redcon One. Everyone wants to be a champion. Everyone wants to be a best. And at Redcon One, they believe in working hard and achieving your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or you're running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. They have a premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War that is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE. It is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs. And it also has carbs from sweet potatoes and oats. And it contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And as a tribute to the show, you can enter the discount code LEGENDS and get a full 15% discount off your order. And I was just talking to Aaron Singerman, the owner of Redcon One, the other day, and he said they are coming out with a bar, a meal replacement bar. It's based on the MRE, so it's going to have protein from the same that's in the meal replacement. It's going to have salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs as a protein, and the carbs will come from sweet potatoes and oats, and it's all going to be in a bar. So that's going to be really great. So again, go to redcon1.com. Enter the discount code LEGENDS and get 15% discount. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden age of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They are the brand that I used to win the Masters Natural Mr. Universe in 2012, plus all the other photo shoots I've gotten ready for. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the new 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion. And they're sponsoring Sergio Oliva Jr., who is now preparing for the Arnold Classic. And they just signed on Tom Platz, one of the, of course, the legendary bodybuilders of all time. And Tom is now associated with Old School Labs. So check them out at oldschoollabs.com. And you can use the discount code LEGENDS12, and you'll get 12% off your order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, I had a pretty exciting week this week. I drove out to Birmingham, Alabama to watch the filming of the movie Bigger, which is the biopic on Joe Weider's life. And it should be out next year sometime, probably around the end of the summer of next year. And this is going to be a real movie. This isn't going to be a direct-to-DVD movie or a movie that's going to be on Netflix. This is going to be a movie that's going to be in the theater. And it's got a full production team, of course. George Gallo is the director. George has done other movies. He did a movie called Middlemen, which was pretty good. He did Bad Boys 2. And he actually wrote the screenplay for Midnight Run with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin, which is one of my favorite movies. Julianne Hough is going to be playing Betty Weider. Tyler Hoechlin is going to be playing Joe Weider. This is a young Joe Weider. And Anirin Bernard, who is in the movie Dunkirk right now, he is going to be playing a young Ben Weider. So it's going to be a really great movie. And I drove out to Birmingham, Alabama on Tuesday, and I saw on Wednesday they were filming the scenes for the 1970 Mr. Olympia contest. So that was really cool to see. They had Callum Van Mogen playing Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he looked just like Arnold. He looked like a young 23-year-old Arnold, which is what Arnold would have been in 1970 when he beat Sergio Oliva for the 1970 Olympia. And they did his hair just like Arnold had his hair, and he's got the jawline. He looks like him facially, and he was in fantastic condition as I got to see the pose down when they were posing on stage. And Sergio Oliva Jr. from Old School Labs is playing his father, Sergio Oliva. So Sergio shaved his head, and he's got the mustache that his father had. So it was really, really great stuff to see them recreate the 1970 Mr. Olympia contest on stage. That was really awesome. Bob Chicarillo was also in the movie. I got to see him. My friend Dan Solomon, of course, invited me out to the movie. And Dan is the co-producer, and he was really the one that got it all started. He's the one that contacted the producer, the other producer, and he gave him the idea for the Joe Weider story. He thought this would make a great movie. Because, of course, for those of you who don't know, Joe Weider was a kid in the 1930s when the Depression was around, and he grew up in Montreal, Canada, and he started the idea for this magazine, which later became the start of the fitness industry. So Joe Weider was the one who, with no money and just this idea, just this vision of what he saw the future could bring, he created the fitness industry. And then, of course, his brother Ben Weider started the IFBB. So together, Joe and Ben Weider really changed the whole industry of fitness. Because if you think back then, of course, nobody was working out. Nobody knew anything about bodybuilding. It was all Joe and Ben Weider who changed it all. So this is really going to be an amazing movie. It's an amazing story. And Dan Solomon invited me out. We're hoping to get Dan Solomon on the show pretty soon so he can tell us a little bit more about how he got this movie started and a little bit more about the movie, because Dan's been on the set pretty much since they started filming out in Birmingham, Alabama. He's obviously got a lot of great insight into the movie, and he was telling me a little bit about it, about some of the other scenes they filmed when Joe was young and the relationship he had with his mother and his first wife. So it's really, really going to be a great story. So anyways, as I said, I got to see the filming of the 1970 Mr. Olympia. Bob Chicarillo was there, and Bob is playing one of the commentators, one of the TV commentators. Also, my friend Tim Wilkins plays the other TV commentator. So they are in the movie. Oh, then I saw my friend Tim Gardner. He was out there. He was watching along with me. And Jimmy Mentis was out there. And, of course, Aaron Singerman, the owner of Redcon One. He was out there with his wife, Darielle. So we all got to spend the day together and watch them film this movie. So it was really, really great stuff. So I'm really excited about it. It was cool seeing a movie being made. I never saw that before. But being on a set, I mean, they have to film these scenes like 8, 10, 12, 15 times sometimes. It's amazing how long it takes to film a movie. Just one simple scene that lasts only a couple seconds, they have to constantly film it, refilm it, film it from a different angle, use different lenses, I guess, with the cameras. It's kind of complicated, but they got a lot of people working on the set, so it was a really big production, and I'm really excited about this movie. Coincidentally, the last fictional movie, I think, that was made about bodybuilding that I could think of was Stay Hungry, which was also made in Birmingham, Alabama, back in 1975. So that's pretty weird coincidence. And of course, that was the movie that launched the career of Arnold Schwarzenegger, because he made that movie right before he made Pumping Iron. And Stay Hungry was written, it was a fictional book, but it was written by Charles Gaines, who was also the author of the book Pumping Iron. And he recommended Arnold for the role, just like Dan recommended Callum Van Mogen and Sergio Oliva Jr. for the role. So that was really pretty cool stuff. It's funny how it all works out. The story of Sergio Oliva Jr. is really amazing, because here is a guy, here is a kid, when the year he was born, his father competed in the 1984 Mr. Olympia. And the last time Sergio Sr. competed in the Mr. Olympia was in 1972. And he was so upset about Arnold beating him, and he just felt that Joe Weider would never give him a fair shake, that he decided never to compete in the IFBB again. And then the promoter that year, Wayne D'Amelia, talked Sergio into competing in the Mr. Olympia again. So he went in. He was kind of past his prime. He was probably in his late 40s at that point. And he ended up taking eighth place, but the crowd absolutely loved him. He still looked fantastic with the small waist and the huge arms, but he just didn't have the cuts and the conditioning that the modern-day bodybuilders in 1984 had. So at the end, when he got announced eighth place, the crowd was booing and going crazy. And Rick Wayne, who was the writer of Muscle Builder or Muscle and Fitness magazine at the time, he convinced Sergio's wife at the time, Arlene, to hand their baby son, who was Sergio Jr., to his father. And Sergio brought his son up on stage and he said, "Here is the next myth." And then he went to the microphone and he made a speech. And of course, that speech is part of what we use for our opening for this podcast, where he says, "I will forever be the myth." That came from the 1984 Mr. Olympia. So it's so weird now that Sergio Jr. did take up bodybuilding, and he is now a professional bodybuilder. And now they're making a movie about his father. And of course, they choose him to play the part. But if he never would have took up bodybuilding, he would never be in this movie. So it's funny how coincidences work out, how fate works out. So I wish the best for Sergio Oliva Jr. He's going to be training, of course, for the Arnold Classic. And Tom Platz is training for him, as I mentioned on the show last week. It's going to be great to follow his career. And then Callum Van Moger, who plays Arnold Schwarzenegger, he is originally from Australia. And I remember years ago, he was competing in another organization, not the IFBB. I forget what the name of the organization is. It's from Australia, I believe. And he won the junior division of the Mr. Universe in that contest. And Callum is a very good-looking kid, great physique, but he made a video about how he liked the classic physiques of the Arnold era. And I think they were showing pictures of Arnold during this video. And it was sort of a lifestyle type video where it showed him, you know, getting up and brushing his teeth and then heading out on his bike and lifting weights at the gym. And he said how he has no desire to look like the modern day bodybuilders. He likes to look like the classic physiques, which of course he was referring to Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this is an idea that has taken on a life of its own over the last few years. And that's why Arnold made that speech a couple of years ago at the Arnold Classic about how he didn't like the way the modern day bodybuilders were looking with their stomachs sticking out. And that's really the basis of this whole podcast, is the going back to the golden age of bodybuilding and rediscovering the stories and the individuals associated with that golden age. Callum sort of made a career for himself of looking like a classic physique type of bodybuilder. And that was before they even developed the division of classic physique. And everybody started comparing him to Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Arnold has even met him at the gym. He showed him some posing and how to do some poses. So now here we are in 2017. And Callum Van Moger has come from Australia. He now lives in California. He is carving his own career for himself. He's a huge hit on social media. And now he is playing Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's really, really funny how things all work out. So that was my story of going out there and seeing the movie Bigger being made. And we're going to look forward to that next year in 2018. Oh, my other big news, of course, and I mentioned this last week also, is that my book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, is now available on Amazon.com. It just became available yesterday. I got the copy of the book last week in the mail, and I reviewed it. And once I approved it, that was the proof of the book. Now it is on sale on Amazon.com. So just go to Amazon.com and punch in Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1. It's about $19.95, and you can get your own copy. So I'm really, really excited about it. The book came out great. The pictures look fantastic. And as I mentioned, these are stories from 1970s bodybuilding. So I have the whole Arnold-Sergio saga in there, when Sergio beat Arnold in 1969, and then when Arnold turned around and beat Sergio the next year in 1970, which was the part they filmed for the movie. I have the 1972 Mr. Olympia, which is still controversial to this day, because that was Sergio's best ever shape, and Arnold was a little bit off his best, so a lot of people thought Sergio should have won that show. I've got the 1973 Mr. International contest, which was held in Tijuana, Mexico. And that was when Sergio entered that contest and Arnold was there and he challenged Arnold to come up on stage and compete against him. I've got the rise of Frank Zane in there when Frank won the 1977 Mr. Olympia. We've got chapters in there about Cal Skalak, who was one of my favorite bodybuilders. He won the 1977 Mr. Universe and was actually undefeated in his bodybuilding career until he competed in the 1978 Mr. Olympia. And I've got the story of the 1978 Mr. America when Tony Pearson won, the 1977 Mr. America when Danny Padilla won, And I've got the story of the 1980 Mr. Olympia in there, and that's two chapters. So it's really a great book. It's about 12 chapters total. So you want to check it out. Again, go to Amazon.com. And if you want to order a copy from me, an autographed copy, I have some copies at home. So just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And of course, guys, go to our website at bodybuildinglegendsshow.com and sign up for the mailing list. And then you'll get on our mailing list and I'll send you our weekly email so you know what's going on with the bodybuildinglegendsshow.com and, of course, the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I hope you guys enjoyed last week's episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast with Sean Ray. Sorry we got that episode up a few days late, but I was traveling out to Alabama, so that's why we got it up on Friday instead of our typical Monday. I also want to mention we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They have a wide range of services that ensure that you will not only feel and look amazing, but are also comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. They offer very competitive pricing also, along with their quality products. Those are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. You can use the promotion code LEGEND and get a free consultation. Plus, you get 20% off any packages. So you can call them at 813-922-8939, or you can email them info@flalternativemeds.com. That's flalternativemeds.com. And again, their number is 813-922-8939. They are located, of course, in Tampa, Florida, but you can call them from anywhere in the United States. They will work with anybody in the continental United States. We've had a few of our listeners from Bodybuilding Legends podcast call them. That's great. So no matter where you're at, they will do a blood test and they will see where your levels are at. And then they will recommend whatever they think you'd need to be at your optimum levels and to be at your total health. So I'd recommend you really call them, 813-922-8939. All right, here is our interview with our guest of the week, Dr. Robert Goldman, who is the head of the drug testing for the IFBB. And we are talking about the 1990 Mr. Olympia, and Dr. Goldman was in charge of the drug testing for that contest. So here is our interview with Dr. Robert Goldman on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest this week, Dr. Robert Goldman, who was an old friend of mine from Chicago, and Dr. Goldman was the person who organized the drug tests for the 1990 Mr. Olympia, which we're going to be talking about today. How you doing, Dr. Bob?
Very good.
So we're going to talk about that 1990 Mr. Olympia, which was kind of unique in the history of bodybuilding because that was the only year that the IFBB actually did drug testing for their major competitions, the Mr. Olympia and, of course, the Arnold Classic as well. But tell us a little bit about your background, Dr. Goldman, because I know you've got a real extensive background and a lot of our listeners may not know about it.
Well, I have four medical degrees, two physician surgeon degrees and two PhDs. And Ben Weider and Joe Weider recruited me at a very young age to take over as chairman of the IFBB and the NPC Medical Commission, as well as Jim Mannion with the NPC. Mm-hmm. And so for over the last 30 years, I've been chief doc for the sport. I designed the drug testing protocols and programs, which we've used at the IFBB Mr. Universes for a quarter of a century, which, as you know, bodybuilding is now in the World Games, the Pan Am Games, the Southeast Asia Games, Bali Games. These are all right. Olympic-level World Games. These are Olympic-level competitions. So I've been very involved in the bodybuilding world from that end, and also being very close with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Reg Park and all the other guys during the year. So it's kind of neat because I got to see each of these Mr. Olympias as they went from amateur, like a Ronnie Coleman or a Lee Haney, all the way through mm-hmm. them becoming Mr. Olympia. So it's been quite a fun journey.
How did you meet Joe Weider and Ben Weider? Because I know you met them when you were pretty young, right?
Yeah, I worked for the Jack Lane Health Clubs, and some of my first world records were records that I broke that Jack Lane previously held. So I knew them when I was working in the gym chain, but actually I met Ben via mail when I was about 12 or 13 years old, and I wrote Ben Weider And I said, you know, I'd like to be a doctor one day and, you know, be involved in the sport. And he was very, very attentive. I mean, he was writing me back and forth from when I was just a kid. And then as I moved on in my career and you know, finished college, went into medical school, Ben came to me and says, hey, look, you know, now that you've gone where you said you were going to go, you know, all those years ago, how about you come and get involved in the sport? And then I ended up in 1985 taking over the IFBB and the MPC medical commissions.
Tell me a little bit about those world records you broke too, Dr. Bob, because I remember seeing pictures of you doing the handstand push-ups and things like that, and a lot of people may not know about that.
Well, you know, it was kind of funny. The first time I touched the pull-up bar, I broke the school record, so it seemed like I had a good talent for strength and endurance, which, you know, today you see a lot of these kids that are really doing some great stuff. And so I had world records in handstand push-ups, overhead one-arm push-ups. The sit-up record was 13,500, but straight leg, not bent leg, much harder, where you go straight leg, crossing elbow to the opposing knee. So the records were pretty tough back then because, you know, no rest breaks, no bent leg sit-ups, handstand, if you didn't touch nose to floor, it didn't count. So they were quite strict with Guinness and got into Guinness a number of times. So it was a pretty fun ride doing that for so many years.
Wow. So what are some of your records that you've done?
Well, handstand push-up record, again, this is not with a wall, straight up and down, you know, full
right.
Was 321. Overhead extension push-ups, you know, where you lay flat on the ground, put your hands all the way over your head so they're straight, and then you lift yourself off the ground with one arm, which very few people could get off with two arms. With one arm, hardly anybody can. And that record was 161. And the sit-up record, one of the sit-up records was 13,500 consecutive. And then a whole array of other ones, you know, a different kind of goofy, crazy sporting activity.
And how did you get involved in the interest in bodybuilding? What age was that?
Well, you know, all of us, John, you know, we all grew up, you know, looking at the comic books and the superheroes, Superman and Batman. You know, we all wanted to be the strong superstar kind of guy. And I mean, that's why you got into bodybuilding too. And we're very excited to live your dream. From my end, I wasn't so much interested in the cosmetic look, but I was interested in what I could physically do. And that's why I also started martial arts at a young age. So I was more interested in the physical performance versus the outward appearance. And but just by virtue of doing those types of activities, you end up becoming almost looking like a bodybuilder, you know, not really looking for that, but that's the way you sort of end up.
Well, that's crazy, because I know you're now good friends with Arnold Schwarzenegger, as you mentioned, and so you had to be reading about him, because he was in all the magazines when you were younger, and then to become friends with him later, that had to be pretty wild, huh?
Well, I was quite young when I met Arnold, and actually, he threw me out of his trailer when they were filming Raw Deal in Chicago.
Oh, really? 1986, yeah.
I was just a student. I stuck my head in there. I said, hey, Arnold, and Sven, who was his bodyguard, who you also would have seen in a number of the movies, really big guy.
Yeah, Sven Thorsen.
He had Sven throw me out. and then we became friends shortly thereafter, and I served on the President's Council when he was chairman. And I've sort of been one of his medical advisors for decades now. And Arnold's amazing. I mean, he's, you know, one of the most remarkable, charismatic individuals of this century. And he's, you know, in many ways, he's a historical figure, you know, and what he's done in so many areas. So, you know, quite a mentor and quite an inspiration.
Yeah, I agree. I know Jim Lorimer's mentioned that a few times at the Arnold Classic. And he said that, you know, 100 years from now, people will still be talking about Arnold. And I agree. I agree with you. I think he's just an unbelievable person in history that, you know, he's accomplished so much and what he's done. And, you know, I've always been a big fan of his as well.
I'll tell you a funny story. You know, we do the Arnold Sports Festivals all over the world now. And in Brazil, it's insane. They get like 100, 150,000 people. And in Brazil, what they want to do is they want to grab him. They want to punch him. They want to touch him. So they have something called the bubble. And I was with him in Sao Paulo for the last Arnold Sports Festival in Brazil. There's a bubble where they have over 150 to 200 bodyguards with their arms clasped to try and prevent the crowds from literally trying to jump over. Remember, in Brazil, you got a lot of JJ, a lot of jiu-jitsu guys here. You got some pretty suckers out there. And these people, and you are in the bubble, and if you don't stay within the bubble, you're going to get hit and banged and, It was great. I went around twice. I can hardly wait to go back next year. It was good fun.
Wow. So tell us your work with the IFBB then. You said Ben Weider called you in 1985, and he asked you to start working with the IFBB with the drug testing. Because I know Ben really wanted to get bodybuilding in the Olympics, right?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting story what happened back then. When I was a teenager, I wrote a report about anabolic steroids way before the research was out. And it was a well-referenced, 275 medical references. And I sent it off to Ben and worked with his assistant, Pam Kagan, to get this report ready. And at the end, his medical committee at the time, because I was only like 19 at that age when I wrote that report, said that this was all nonsense and the things I was writing about, were not correct, even though I had 275 medical references. So they killed the report, and Ben called me up and he said, gee, I'm so sorry, you did a really great job on it, but my medical committee doesn't want to allow me to publish it. Well, sure enough, a few years later, I took over the medical committee, got rid of his whole committee, got a new committee, and the report was published and became the most popular report in the history of the IFBB and was translated into 37 languages.
Wow.
So then 1985-86, Ben wanted to start dope control, because he was working with His Excellency Samaranch to get bodybuilding in as getting it Olympic recognition to become an Olympic sport. And he was really making some good headway. So he recruited me, and I had some relationships through my Olympic contacts, so because I trained the Olympic Games in freestyle wrestling. And so I designed the whole drug testing protocol, ran the protocol. We did the Miss Olympia starting in 1986 when it was Corey Everson and Linda Murray and, really some great, great athletes back then. And then finally in 1990, which was 3 or 4 years later, we did it for the Mr. Olympia in Chicago. So I had Lee Haney and, a whole lot of guys coming through. Lee tested clean, by the way. And so we initiated the drug testing protocol, but we disqualified like 40% of the athletes. And then we had the same issue with the Arnold Classic. And I don't like disqualifying athletes. It's a miserable thing to have to do. These people are my friends, but I follow protocol. It doesn't matter if they're my friends. Positive is positive, So I had the not pleasant duty to disqualify people who I was quite fond of and had a lot of respect for.
Dr. Bob, if you could tell us a little bit about the protocol for those testing, like what kind of tests did you do and were you testing everybody and how did that all work?
Well, for the Olympia and the Arnold Classic way back then, we tested all the athletes.
Okay.
We used the Olympic laboratory, we used Olympic protocol, we used the same kits, the A and B sample, everything identical to the Olympic Games, and these were tested at the certified Olympic laboratory. So we did everything very, very carefully verified. They were watched when they went into the, into the bathroom to void their sample and, to give their sample and so on. It was fairly strict, and I can tell you we had some funny scenes, not at the professional level, but at the amateur level. We had a few kind of funny instances. One, there was an Egyptian athlete named Mabruk, who at this time, back in the 80s, Professor Manfred Donica, who was from West Germany, who actually invented steroid testing for the Olympics, he was one of my mentors, and he was one who trained me. And this Egyptian athlete had his sample was like cool like water, and it had oil droplets floating on top. What this yo-yo did was he took an oil bottle for suntan oil and filled it with water, but when he squeezed it, he forgot to rinse the oil out, so he had oil droplets floating on top. So, of course, German pulled his pants right off, saw the bottle, we disqualified him. But generally, the athletes were, generally very respectful, very cooperative. And one of the good things that came out of it is when I would get the posters from each of these championships, I would get every single athlete to sign, which no one had ever done before, but they had to because I was in charge of dope control. They had no choice. So I have all these original posters from every world championship, Mr. Olympia, Arnold Classic, IFBB Universe. And I donated those to the Physical Culture Museum, where Ben Weider and Joe Weider and Arnold and others have donated their papers and their artifacts. So they have these great remembrances with every signature from every athlete from all these championships, which was really neat to have.
Wow. Is that the museum that Jan and Terry Todd have in Texas?
Yeah, the Stark Center, and I've donated a lot of a whole anti-aging library. The International Sports Hall of Fame, which I started, is also housed at the Stark Center, and Jan and Terry have really done a remarkable job. It's a truly astounding place, with the things that they have archived. In fact, one of the neat things that I sent to them, which I almost didn't want to give them because it was such a historical document, Jim Kelly, who was Grace Kelly's brother, he was an Olympic rower. And I received the last letter that he ever dictated before he died that morning, where I talked about steroid testing Olympics. And the secretary even said that this is the very last thing that he did before he died this morning. Made that to the museum as well. I hated to let it go, but I thought it was historical in content, so needed to be donated to the museum.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. I didn't even know Grace Cudley's brother was in the Olympics.
Yeah, no, he was an Olympic rower, and he was going back to go for the games again. He was training back.
So tell us a little bit more about the drug testing, because you actually started that in 1986 then, right, at the World Championships, the one that was in Tokyo, Japan.
Yeah, well, the first one was 86 in Tokyo, and we had a funny scene there because, you know, we used the Japanese Olympic laboratory, and the Japanese were great. They gave us like 20 staff in white jackets to assist, and the crazy thing that happened during the dope control was Ralph Mueller, who you may have saw in Gladiator. You know, Ralph
Mueller,
that's one of the biggest bodybuilders anyone had ever seen.
Right.
When Ralph walks into the dope control center area where we're doing it, the Japanese scientists go crazy. All of a sudden, there are cameras out there climbing all over him. He's got like two Japanese on each arm in their white coats, photographs going like nuts. I had to cool everybody. Like, guys, this is a dope control center, okay? You can't be, it's not a photo shoot. But Ralph was, he was very good sport about it. He was quite nervous back then in terms of the competition. He did well. He won. But he was, he was very nervous being in front of so many people. But and Ralph, as you know, hangs out with Arnold a lot. They're very close. And I see Ralph, I know him since he was an amateur back in 86. A great guy.
Yeah, he was a great amateur because he was in the one that Lee Haney won. I think he was third there. And then I think when Bob Paris won also, he was in that one too.
Sure. Yeah, no, these are all terrific athletes, great physiques. And Ralph, went on to, some great stuff when he did Gladiator with Russell Crowe, and he had some good parts.
So you were close to Ben Weider during this time, and you were aware of what was happening with the drug testing and stuff. When Ben was trying to get bodybuilding in the Olympics, did it look like it was getting close? Because I know that was a lifelong dream of Ben Weider, and unfortunately never happened that we got into the Olympic Games.
Well, actually, he did accomplish the goal, which was Olympic recognition. He did get Olympic recognition from the IOC. Now, there's a difference between recognition and being in the Olympic Games. It's
right.
Very hard to get a new sport approved in the Olympic Games. In fact, they dropped wrestling, remember? And then all the guys campaigned to get it back. So it's very hard to get a new sport approved. However, he did achieve the goal of Olympic recognition and got us into all of these regional Olympic games that I had mentioned, the Pan Am Games and the World Games and so on.
World Games, yeah.
But what it was, there was a number of people in the Olympic Committee and the IOC who hated bodybuilding. They just, they just were very subversive. And what they did is when they had a meeting, when people weren't aware what was going on, they voted out that Olympic recognition when the people weren't in the room. And so we threw all this to get it. And then it, in essence, got stolen. And then now you have Rafael Santoco, who's been working very hard to try and, get this back. But, you have the challenges because you're doing things with WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
So what are they looking for? What are the requirements as far as drug testing? You have to go through WADA, as you mentioned, right?
Yeah, well, now it's all WADA-controlled, World Anti-Doping Agency. They're extremely strict, and in some ways I think it's sort of gotten a little out of control because they'll go to athletes' homes in certain countries,
right.
They put you in jail and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So, I'm all for, fair competition the best you can, but I'm not for where you almost become like you're a criminal. Listen, the athletes, they're doing it, but it's not, you don't lock them up for this, you just disqualify them.
Yeah. Yeah, then they had the controversy with the last Olympics, right, where the Russians were found to have gone into that drug testing center and gotten the test out and stuff like that.
Well, it was even better than that. At the 80 Olympics, you know, we had the situation where we didn't go to one Olympic Games under Carter, which is one of the games I was training for. You know, everybody was very upset about that. And then we had the situation where we were prevented from going to the games in Moscow. And during that Olympic Games, the Russians broke every record under the sun because they were in control of the dope control. And, of course, there was no dope control. They would just take the stuff and pour it down the sink. so, you know, it was, you know, there's a lot of monkey business going on. In fact, I remember, I think it was the Seoul Korea Games when Ben Johnson won the gold medal for the 100 yard, for the 100 meter. Mm-hmm. And the Prime Minister of Canada was up there bragging about having the greatest athletes. Then he got disqualified the next day. It was a real mess, quite a mess they had going on. So there's all this kind of funny stuff that goes on with dope control over the years.
So what did Ben say to you then in 1990 when they decided that year that they were going to drug test the major events like the Arnold Classic and the Mr. Olympia?
Well, you know, he said this is going to be challenging, but I really want us in the Olympics. And, you know, and Arnold felt that it was necessary too. You know, we got to try and get with the program. And they were trying to do it right. But what happened was is that the fans were complaining, saying, hey, we're paying all this money to see freaks. We don't want regular people. And so they were trying to do the right thing. Ben, Joe, you know, Arnold, they were all trying to do the right thing. And the fans were telling them, no, we want to see freaks. And so they were getting punished for doing a good deed. And I ended up getting punished along the way because, you know, these guys were my friends, but I had to disqualify them. And, you know, it didn't matter how friendly, how much I may have personally liked them, or they may have been my buddies, you follow protocol. I mean, it's just like as a doctor, you know, you can't breach protocol. And so it was not fun. So fortunately, I let the people in Madrid handle the dope control now, so I don't get stuck in that position.
So did you change the testing at all from the Olympia to the Arnold? Because I know with the Arnold, I just did an interview with Mike Ashley a couple of weeks ago, and Mike told me, of course, that he lost the contest to Sean Ray, but then Sean Ray was found like a week or two later to have failed the drug test. So then they had to give the title to, they disqualified Sean and gave it to Mike. In the Olympia though, that didn't happen, right? I mean, there was no disqualifications afterwards.
Because they were disqualified prior.
Prior, right.
We were able to get the results back quick enough. You see what happened with the Arnold, we couldn't get the stuff back fast enough. With the Olympia, they were really adamant about not taking the title from someone, so they made sure we had those results prior.
So what was your feeling with the way the guys looked at the Olympia? Because you're a big fan of the sport, and like you said, I was at that show also because it was in Chicago, and it seemed to me that most of the guys were not at their best. Some were way off, and you know, some of the guys looked totally different, and other guys looked not as good, but still good enough, like Lee Haney and Lee Labrada, and I think Sean Ray, who failed the test at the Arnold, and he passed it at the Olympia. And what was your feeling about how all the competitors looked?
Well, obviously, they were smaller. They weren't as cut. You know, I mean, look, the drugs are the drugs, you know, and they were not quite what they were. I mean, they still look good. But, you know, back then also realized, you know, they have the big expanded bellies that you see today. Which, you know, which we really consider kind of problematic because they're so, you know, they're so bloated.
Yeah.
You know, and these are some things that we're trying to, because the organomegaly that occurs with some of the stuff these guys are taking, I mean, you know, you can end up with incompetent valves and all kinds of mess. And, you know, we've lost some athletes recently. You know, I'm not saying whether it was to steroids or that, but they're, you know, some of these guys are dying pretty young.
Yeah, Dallas McCarver died at 26,
Yeah, it was terrible, you know.
I mean, yeah, it was.
He was a good kid, and bang, you know, goodbye.
Right. And then what a lot of people may not realize over that 1990 Olympia is that there were quite a few people who failed the drug test. I remember Barry DeMay, I think Vince Comerford, J.J. Marsh. Those are just a couple of names I can think of off the top of my head, but I think there was like over 10 people, right, Bob?
Oh, it was a mess. We disqualified 40% of the athletes. It was a nightmare.
Wow. Yeah.
I was ready to get on stage myself.
Right.
It was, we disqualified quite a number of the athletes, and it was challenging because, you know, you never like, you know, doing that and disqualifying the people. And, you know, realize also that some, like with Barry DeMay, the athletes can test negative one day and positive the next, because as your body breaks down anabolics, it breaks it down in a sawtooth pattern where it's positive, negative, it's going up and down. So you could be negative one, positive the next, and you really don't know when that's going to occur. And so it can be challenging. And we used to do some out of competition testing, which it was too much work and headache, so we ceased that. And also the tests were quite expensive back then. They were like $250, $275, $300 per test.
Hmm. Who was paying that cost? Was it the IFBB?
Oh, well, the organizers or the person that did the license for the particular contest. But there are a few times where the federation or the individuals didn't pay the test. I got stuck paying it.
Really? Wow.
Yes. Not only did I have the unpleasant job of disqualifying people, I also had the unpleasant job of getting stuck with a bill.
Right. So I've talked to Lee Labrada about this, and he was of the opinion that he wishes that they would have continued with it because he thinks the athletes would have sort of adapted to the new rules and they would have learned how to, you know, get in shape without the drugs. What's your feeling on that, Dr. Bob? What do you feel if the IFBB would have continued with it? Do you think we would have lost our fan base, or do you think the bodybuilders would have adapted and finally have, you know, learned how to do it without the drugs?
Well, I think they would have adapted. I mean, look, they've already dropped the Miss Olympia, okay? The Miss International and the Miss Olympia, because they just don't want that kind of look anymore. So they've started the more, you know, physique-oriented divisions of the IFBB. And what is the fastest growing division we have now is, you know, bikini, fitness, figure. Because they want women to look like women. In fact, even when you want, and you know, John, when you walk around the Olympia in the old days, you used to see all the he-she's running around, these women that look like better than the guys.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't
see
a lot. You don't see many of them anymore because it is, you know, they change the rules and they change the judging, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're getting more. But, you know, looking at some of the girls now, they're starting to look kind of hard, even the bikini and figure girls. So I think they're starting to, you know, starting up with that now as well. So it's really hard to do that. But yeah, if we continue the drug testing, I think it would have had some impact. But the what goes along with it, the expense, the headaches, the disqualifications, I think it was just too much for the organizers to bear, especially when the fans were in opposition to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wonder, you know, what would have happened. We'll never know, but it just seemed like it was a step in the right direction. But then it just never really went forward with it after that 1 year, you know.
Well, I mean, you're a natural bodybuilder who did really well and won a lot of championships. So, but you're more the exception than the rule. I mean, it's just like in strength sports, you know, when I was doing world records and stuff, you know, the other guys were juicing up and I was a natural athlete. But, you know, that's a personal choice. And I don't put the guys down because of the pressures they're under and they end up doing this or that. I mean, that's all a personal choice, how you want to win or what you want to win. And so everybody chooses the way they want to do it.
Dr. Bob, talk a little bit also about the thing you do at the Arnold Classic every year, the Hall of Fame, the World Championship Hall of Fame, where you have athletes from all sports. And I know you started that a little bit in Chicago, but it really expanded it now over the last quite a few years over at the Arnold Classic. I think that's really an amazing event. I've gone to it a couple of times, and it's really one of the highlights of the Arnold Classic.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. It started out as just something that I thought would be important to do. I founded the International Sports Hall of Fame in 2012, and Arnold is my co-host for it. And what I wanted to try and do is pick five or six athletes from all sports, and not only those that were great world champions and inducted into their respective own Hall of Fames, whether it be the NFL, NBA, bodybuilding, or whatever, MMA, UFC, but also that they give back, that they are charitable in their works, and that they're very keen on mentoring young people, and they show post-career that they really care about others. And so you could be the greatest athlete, but if you don't give back, you're not considered. But over the years, we've had amazing people like, you know, guys like Randy Couture, UFC world champion, Mark Henry, Earl the Pearl Monroe, NBA Hall of Famer, Bruno Sammartino, Dan Gable, one of the greatest wrestlers in history, Cynthia Rothrock, 11-time world champion. Then the Hollywood crowd, we've had Jason Statham, Triple H, you know, from the WWE, Linda Murray, Don the Dragon Wilson, Michael Jai White, who's a very good friend of mine, Evander Holyfield, of course, Mr. Olympia is like Ronnie Coleman and Lee Haney, and we had Luke Ferrigno, and, you know, just some really great, Herschel Walker last year. So, we picked some real A-listers, and what's also great is they also then go to Arnold's After School All-Star charity event, and we had Johnny Bench, who's, you know, one of the greatest baseball players in all time, Hoyce Gracie, the first UFC world champion. You know, we've got just, and so it's, I only allow about 250 people in the room. So 100 members of the international press, and almost everybody else is a world champion or, you know, iconic type person like yourself. So even the guys that are like superstars themselves go crazy in that room, because you turn 3 feet this way is Arnold, the 4 feet is Randy Couture the other way, because the guys come back as alumni.
Yeah, yeah.
Really become a stellar event. It's a lot of work because we got 48 minutes to do the whole event.
Yeah.
But people lose their minds, and I have to have a lot of security, a lot of extra, you know, police and guards in the room because people are dying to get into the room. We don't charge anybody. I pay for the whole thing. There's no fee. We fly all the athletes in first class. You know, we really do a really class job, and it's great fun and very exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's a great event. I'm glad I was able to attend it a couple times. And just some of the speeches that the people give are really amazing.
Well, it's all about inspiration and giving back to others. One of the most fun things I would say from all the years of doing that, there were a number of moments. It was great hanging out with Jason Statham. We've become good friends, and he's really a terrific guy. But one of the real highlights for me were, you know, I grew up in New York, so Bruno Sammartino was like a god. You know, he filled Square Garden more than anybody, Frank Sinatra more than anyone. So Bruno Sammartino, Franco Colombo, who was going in the same year, and Arnold, who co-hosts with me, had not seen each other in 43 years.
Wow.
So, like, put on that stage together at the Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah, I was there that year. That was great to see, because I never saw Bruno wrestle or anything, but I remember seeing pictures in the magazines of them from like 1974 all together. And then to see them together again, that was a great moment.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, really, really remarkable. And I saw Bruno more in his prime when I was quite young. I was getting inducted into the World Bodybuilding Guild Hall of Fame that Dan Lurie used to hold on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Jack LaLanne went in there, Bill Pearl, and Bruno was the year or two before me. And what an amazing, I mean, him and Bill Pearl, too. Unbelievable physiques, powerful individual.
Yeah.
And nice guys, you know, just really, really, you know, humble, good guys. Bruno is just a great guy. Great guy.
Yeah, he looked like it. And as you mentioned, Bill Pearl, what a great gentleman he is, huh?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
He's still around today, and I've met him a couple times. What a real class act. What a great bodybuilder.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, Bill, he's not feeling too well these days, but I remember the first time I saw Bill at that particular Hall of Fame. I think it was in the late 1978, and they had Jack LaLanne that year too.
Wow!
Like the largest human I had seen at that age. Like when I used to work for the Jack LaLanne Health Clubs. I mean, and he was a vegetarian, and this was like this huge guy. I guess he was in his 40s.
Yeah.
Mid to late 40s back then. Unbelievable physique, and just a terrific guy.
Yeah, I brought him out to Chicago for one of my natural shows out there and gave him an award. I think he was 81. He was still a huge man, you know, in great shape. And you never guess he was in his 80s.
Truly amazing fella. Just an amazing fella.
Yeah. And what else are you up to now, Dr. Bob? Because I know I see you on Facebook a lot. You're involved with a lot of movies and everything, right?
Well, I sort of re-entered into the martial arts community again after being away. I got my sixth dan in Malaysia in 1986. You know, when I hit my high-level black belt. And then I was sort of out for a number of years. And then in 2012, Master Alan Goldberg, who holds the largest martial arts event in the world, along with Chuck Zito from Sons of Anarchy, and you know all the mafia roles that he plays with Jason.
Mm-hmm.
They came to my Hall of Fame event, and then they came to the Arnold Sports Film Festival, which I also sponsored that year. And then they saw me doing all these world records on in the video, and they said, "You got to come to our event." So that following January in 2013, I went to this big martial arts gala event in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And I started running into my old instructors, guys I used to fight back in the old days, and it was great. So I sort of re-entered the martial arts community in 2013. And in fact, I just came back Saturday night. I was at the Elite Black Belt Martial Arts Hall of Fame. I received that induction. And it's a great community. The martial arts community are, the thing that I so respect about them is that they're all teachers. Everybody has a lot of respect. They're very modest, even though they're lethal individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of respect for each other. So I'm trying to do all I can to help that community. So I've re-entered that community pretty heavily worldwide to try and assist with the different things that they're trying to do and helping, helping the different martial arts groups and schools. And then that sort of led into producing movies. So I produced movies with Don the Dragon Wilson and Cynthia Rothrock and a whole array of other champions, and it's really been a lot of fun. And in fact, now I'm even for my own production company, and just did a filming, and I'm now, you know, head producing my own movies. And I guess since Weinstein's out of the mix, maybe there's some room for you.
Right. Yeah, there's room at the top now for you.
What a mess.
I thank you for joining us today, Dr. Bob Goldman, because I know you're super busy and you got a lot going on, and I wanted to get your insight into that 1990 Mr. Olympia testing and also the Arnold Classic, because I know you were the one who was behind all of it and you were running the whole thing. So best of luck with everything you're doing, and I look forward to seeing you at the Arnold Classic again next year. I think it's going to be another great event, and I think you're doing some really great stuff.
Well, John, it's always a pleasure to speak to you and to see you. I look forward to seeing you at the next event, and I'm sure your fans out there know that you keep in amazing shape all the time. And keep up the good work, but I don't have to tell you that because you do it on your own.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Bob. It's always great talking to you again.
Okay, buddy. Good talking to you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thank you to Dr. Robert Goldman for joining us this week. And I want to thank our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Next week, we'll be talking to another legendary bodybuilder, Rich Gaspari, the Dragon Slayer himself. And Rich is going to talk about his career and about his supplement company. But of course, we will also be talking about the 1990 Mr. Olympia. And Rich is going to say what he did to prepare for that contest, which was, of course, the only drug-tested Mr. Olympia ever. So join us next week on the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast to talk to Rich Gaspari. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. We'll